We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
2-11-21, a full house in terms of the date. Hopefully you're just as lucky in cards as you are with the calendar. Paul Iander here, and 6.345 feet away, socially distant, is Lindsey Brown.
Always double down on 11. Always, even when the face is showing, Paul. We're not supposed to be showing a lot of faces as of late. Get a mask up.
Right.
But if the face is showing on the guy across from you that you're playing against, double it. You must.
Valuable advice on this Thursday. Big show plowing your way here, including the latest on your Vegas Golden Knights. Some faces returning, some faces exiting.
We're playing tonight.
Yep. Also at 3:37, we'll be talking about the red hot start for the Utah Jazz with our friend Alex Curie from Salt Lake City.
He'll How about those notes?
Dig into that with us. And we'll also have a question and answer session about COVID and the vaccines. It's a new feature we'll have here every Thursday during the show. So,
well, that's around. Very important.
Stick around for that. That'll be important on a day where the president has ordered 200 million more vaccines.
Go get stuck.
Saying that we will have enough for everybody by the end of July.
Excellent to hear.
And then the average Joes will have access as soon as April, apparently.
Yeah, that's what Fauci said this morning, right? And President Biden on track for the 100 million doses in his first 100 days? Wasn't that the goal?
I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think? Well, I thought they said the pacing was okay. You know, I think it's about 2 million a day right now-ish. So that's good. It's better than what we were doing a few weeks ago, don't you think?
1.6 million a day.
Okay.
48 million doses. Now, I'm told, because I have a friend who works in the healthcare industry who is getting her second stick.
Excellent.
Yesterday, she was in the convention center and they had like technical snafus. Like she waited 3 hours to get in.
Okay, so it's about the lines, not the actual needles.
They were checking everybody in by hand.
Wow.
So fortunately, it wasn't windy or rainy yesterday.
Yes, correct. It's fascinating how things can get slowed down so much by just a simple
paper
blip.
Yeah, remember back research back in the day, you had to go to the card catalog in the library.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
correct.
Wasn't all on Wikipedia.
It was before the computers were here,
right.
Or at least we're personal.
Well, they've all taken over now.
Yes,
it's truth.
We have more technology in our phone than what they had when we sent people to the moon in 1969. Paul.
Yes,
fact.
But we still pee in bags.
Yes.
When
I mean, the Canadians put milk in bags, separate, different bags.
Ugh, yeah,
that would be a rough. Rough and tumble type of day, depending.
That is kind of disgusting.
Except for Patches O'Houlihan. I think he would be, he would enjoy it.
Patches O'Houlihan. Yeah. There's a throwback reference.
Yes. You said average Joes. Something was triggered.
Did say average Joes.
You can dodge a wrench. You can dodge a ball, Paul. Right.
They should have never won that championship.
How dare you?
They should have never won.
You put the blindfold on, the onus is on White Goodman.
They qualified for that tournament
from the beaver tranquilizers, Becky, right?
By complete default.
Mm-hmm.
They should have never been in that tournament.
That entire movie, while it would not be made today, is brilliant.
No, I don't think so. I think they would still make that movie today.
Well, hopefully we'll retract a little bit of our PC police, but there are some excellent one-liners in there that would be tough to roll by anybody right now.
Sure.
But anything good is. Art is supposed to be controversial, Paul.
Anything good is.
Yes.
That's right. Quit ruining fun stuff.
Yeah.
Dodgeball was they should have never
Unreal.
Made it.
It's one of my favorite t-shirts.
The movie should have ended about 35 minutes.
How?
Because they should have never
you?
Qualified. They should have never
what
qualified.
What about Steve the Pirate and his transformation? That needed to be included.
Darn.
This is the important stuff. And it was here in Las Vegas.
It's true.
I wonder if they're going to do like a 20-year Annie when it comes around.
The whole reason we have ESPN.
L for love.
We have ESPN The Ocho because of that movie. That's the only reason you see like that hurling of diving of people off the Norwegian boards or whatever it is.
Seems like a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
Just quote it all day long.
Yes, every day.
Right. When Kate throws up in her mouth, I think we can all just relate. Let's get you the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
Well, Lobo Jim.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody.
I think they called me once.
Who? White Goodman?
Globo Gym.
Did they?
Yeah, it was like a three-month membership for like $100.
Just
like
greatness all around.
I got better runs than my shorts.
The Cubs and the Mets are reportedly involved in trade talks on Las Vegas' Chris Bryant, who was here in town taking batting practice up at the Aviator Stadium this afternoon in a closed session. Last year was more public.
We were there.
Yes, this year was a little bit more private.
You were pumped. You were all up in the business.
I was. We were chatting about fatherhood and whatnot.
Yeah, it was before he had his baby.
Now that he's a dad and he is in a contract year, the Mets, as of about a month ago, were not talking to the Cubs about Chris Bryant. Apparently, things have changed. It's not clear if anything will actually happen, but the Mets are looking to unload some bodies, especially when it comes to pitching.
What, DeGrom and Syndergaard that they collected are not doing what they need to do?
No, not that deep.
Oh, not that deep.
Not along that lines.
Okay.
But they've got some pretty big contracts right now in their bullpen. They're looking to get some upgrades in terms of rotation and especially at third base. So we'll see if these reports come true. Again, he is in a contract year. He's got something to prove.
And he's lost a little bit for the love of the game, at least in a Cubs uni.
Yeah.
So maybe he needs a change of scenery.
We'll see what happens.
And as we've discussed, Cohen needs positive PR.
Yeah, well, they haven't had too many wins here in free agency.
No, they have not.
And we'll see. The rumor mill churning once again, Chris Bryant between the Mets and the Cubs.
Number two.
Happy news for the Los Angeles Dodgers, who avoided arbitration today. They were going to have a little sit-down with Walker Buehler and trade numbers. Usually what happens, especially with the resume that Walker Buehler had, it was going to cost the Dodgers probably more than they ended up giving him. So they get Buehler on a two-year contract for $8 million if he wins a Cy Young. Yeah.
What?
Well, he's a free agent technically in the year 2024.
How old is he?
26.
Oh my God, these values are so depreciated right now.
Well, he can make bigger money. This is the deal that gets them to the bigger deal, I think.
Oh my goodness!
Especially for Buehler, they'll do an extension. Dodgers.
How much are they paying Bauer a year? 40.
Bauer's gonna get 40.
Oh my God. It's the haves and the have nots.
Certainly.
We just want to eat some cake, Paul. That's it.
Well, the Dodgers will get him for $3 million, or like $275 this year, $3.25 next year, but then if he gets a bunch of starts and stays healthy, he'll get a truckload of increases.
Yeah, or if he like wins a Cy Young, which isn't out of, the realm of possibility.
Not at all, depending on where he starts in this
talent
lineup.
Talent breeds talent, Paul, especially when they're pitching right next to each other at spring training.
Yeah, no arbitration again for Buehler and the Dodgers, which is good news, and he's locked down for two more years. $8 million and could end up getting the, probably won't, wow. Now that I think about it, probably will not get the opening day start because Bauer's there.
Yeah.
He may go day two.
Mm-hmm. Unless Dusty Tamame needs to step in again.
Maybe.
Maybe. It's a hell of a windup that kid has.
It's the truth. Lots of lettuce, too.
Yes.
And newly engaged.
Oh, yes, he is.
Newly engaged.
Newly engaged. Congratulations, Dusty Tamame.
Yep. In true Texas fashion.
Yep. What did he do?
Number three.
He got down on a bended knee and with his hat in front of a...
That's right.
In front of a giant stone fireplace.
Yes. Correct. That is very Texas.
Yes.
That is very Texas.
He didn't have any animals.
Was there a buck on the wall somewhere?
There were no old wagon wheels on the walls.
The spokes out.
I don't think I've walked into a Texas home without two things. A cross and a wagon wheel.
Yeah. Well... They had to ride the wagons to get there.
Truth.
And you needed to pray a lot because a lot of people died from cholera or dysentery or just straight up diarrhea. I suppose that's what dysentery is in a way. I'm sorry. You grew up in Oregon. I'm just going with what I learned from the trail, at least the game.
Yeah, well,
and Laura Ingalls Wilder.
The Oregon Trail was a rough trip for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, wagon tongues and oxen.
Axles were just snapping left and right.
Right.
Before they were roses.
I tell you what, There's nothing more satisfying in Oregon Trail than sniping a rabbit.
Right? Because they just dart right
out
of you.
Let's go hunting, dude. Rabbit.
It's the worst when it's like a ton of buffalo, and then obviously there's a cultural significance as well now that you think back upon it. But you can't carry it all back.
That's the bears the same way.
Exactly. But the bears come at you, and they might kill you.
Right.
You might, you know, succumb to your injuries.
But the rabbits are good.
What are we going to do with Clara rabbits and her dysentery?
Yeah, I don't know. You named your people?
Oh, heck
number
yeah.
Three.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, number gonna three. I'm going to see which ones of my friends are going to survive.
Sorry, number three.
Number three.
The NHL's outdoor game in Lake Tahoe this year between Boston and Philadelphia, which you will be able to hear here right on CBS Sports Radio 1140 on February the 21st.
Say.
Yes, we'll have a documentary prior to that. So it's a doc on doc. Essentially.
Oh, man. That's going to be a tearjerker, isn't it? Get the smelling salts just to stop the waterworks from the eyes and do it from the nose instead.
Well, the man who chased perfection in the broadcast booth retired back.
Waffle boarded away.
Retired back in October. He's 74 years old and on the reverse side did 47 years of broadcasting hockey. That's all he did. Hockey.
Mm-hmm. He's synonymous with it. And it's going to be a really weird time to go into the NHL playoffs, or I should say Stanley Cup playoffs, without him being a part of it. Because, like, there's nationally televised games, but those, you know, are spotty.
Yep.
But that's what he does. Or that's what he did.
So on NBC, it'll be called Doc Emrick, The Voice of Hockey. It's a 30-minute show. Nothing.
It's not long enough, Paul.
It's 30 minutes.
It's not long
that's
enough.
That's it. You can get more Doc Emrick online right now on YouTube.
This is true. Maybe I should do that. That'd be a nice little pick-me-up.
Right?
Just feeling low.
Just listen to Doc's calls.
Because we left Clara on the side of the trail.
Right.
Yeah.
They broke their leg, and then they died the next day.
Exactly.
Seriously, we
had to go on.
You've been going down this road, and I'm trying to talk about Doc Emrick, and you're talking about the Oregon Trail. You know, in this article, they spelled Wayne Gretzky wrong.
No!
How do you spell Wayne Gretzky wrong?
Who wrote it?
John Healy.
Okay, I was just going to say.
Wayne Gretzky. K-E-Y, Wayne Gretzky. How do you do that?
It's okay. Roger Goodell had a typo in his letter to the fans the other day. The noisiest was the nosiest.
Right. Well, listen, I just had a rough time pronouncing Jesse Puljujarvi of the Edmonton Oilers, who's
exactly.
on the COVID list.
It's okay.
It's just Puljujarvi.
Sometimes your mistakes don't kill you, and sometimes they do. Like when you try to ford the river.
It's when I changed my name to Paul Anger in honor of the weekend. Moving on.
Number four.
Yeah, straight up off the rails right now.
Never.
We are 11 minutes in. We're just getting to Michelob Ultra Arena. So the next time you walk into the Mandalay Bay and go watch a Las Vegas Aces game or a college basketball game or a UFC fight at the Mandalay Bay Event Center, you now be walking into a beer bath. That's what they should call it.
Oh, just do a dunk tank. Brilliant. We're millionaires again, Paul.
The beer bath.
They should just call us. They're just down the road. I love this. Michelob is really pushing a lot of money into the sports marketing these days.
Yeah, there's a ton of
there's
Michelob
a huge like champion commercial cash. With like Serena and other people that are good at sports.
That's what I saw the commercial during the Super Bowl. I was like
that's Michelob?
how she parties.
Yeah, I know, but it's classy. And so clearly they're trying to stance and trying to take some steps into there, and for them to put their name on that event center, which. You know, houses a lot of the athletic talent in this town. New name, who dis?
Right. If the NHL awards do come back here full time, that's where they hold it, is at the Michelob Ultra Arena.
It's only like 4% of the reason why I moved here.
Was
just
because
to go to
of the award
awards.
Shows. All the award shows.
Yes.
So they're going to have bars and lounges around the arena, some signage and stuff like that. But it is no longer the Mandalay Bay Event Center. Not that we were attending any events. But the next time you walk in there, it'll be the Michelob Ultra Arena.
Or get a scuba suit or something. Scuba Steve!
Beer bath. Seriously, just
Brilliant.
Call it the beer bath.
Brilliant.
Number five.
Gosh,
all right.
You're good at this.
It is time for the ultimate sleepover. In Red Deer, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Western Hockey League. To make sure that they can play the 2021 season, in which there are just 24 games, instead of the players staying with host families. And
billet families, Paul. That's what they're called.
The billets.
Yes.
They are instead just going to sleep at the arena.
The coolest thing of all time, Paul. You just get to sleep in a luxury suite. And the cool thing is, too, is like the Billet family and the Billet support system is super, super important and impactful to just the way of hockey life, especially up in Canada. But honestly, this is like a dream come true. We always had team bonding where we would have at least one night in the rink and we would drag our mattresses. There's literally nothing better. Pack blankies. But
oh yeah, that arena is gonna be cold.
But just think, the players are gonna be able to like basically hang out with each other. You don't have it's probably a little bit more of a return to normal than it would be if they were just kind of going back and then, you know, going with their Billet fams and not doing anything. But it's just there's too many, you know, intersections of contact.
Yeah, they get to stay in the private suites. All the private suites. No, there's a ton of seating, obviously. But
sure.
The Billet family's brought in beds, mm-hmm. So they don't have to deal with that.
They got basketball hoops. They got ping pong tables, which is really what's going on behind the hockey, along with soccer and stuff. Catered meals.
It's semi-private, but the interesting part will be is, like, if they're messy, you'll notice it while they're playing because it's open-air suites.
Sure.
So
like, we could see your laundry, like,
right,
drying
socks,
out. Sure.
You know?
But the coaches aren't staying there.
No.
So that means captains and leadership groups got to make sure that everybody buckles down. But I'm sure for a couple of nights it might be a little gnarly. But then once everybody settles in, you're there for the job, for the development. It's the WHL.
Seriously, if they wanted to make some money, they would do like a Big Brother camera thing.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't know. There might be some questions about that.
$9.99.
There might be some privacy restrictions.
People would watch.
Oh, 100%.
They would watch.
I suppose
that.
It's up to the editing.
They
have a couple players opt into it, or just do it in the social communal areas.
They could make money.
Perfect. This is so cool. I would do it
so
in a heartbeat.
Stay at the arena. Well, maybe they'll do that for the Aviators too. The Flyers
can
just stay.
Well, I'm going to be invited. I want to come over and sleep over. I haven't had a sleepover in forever.
Hey guys, there should be one morning where you just wake everybody up. And
hey guys, wake up! Oh my God! Pass the Ox has a new meaning.
That's pretty funny.
It's your ASMR, like, you know, sleepy time playlist.
The Red Deer Rebels gonna stay at the arena so they can play 24 games.
Sick.
Expect others to follow suit. All right, there's your check down. Your five biggest stories of the afternoon, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit betql.com. We will stick with the Frozen Pond talk. The Knights taking on Anaheim, round two.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Thursday afternoon. We do have Golden Knights hockey over at the Fortress tonight as they take on Anaheim. If you don't follow us on Twitter, you should do so. Sports Radio 1140. We retweeted a video from our Instagram account, also at Sports Radio 1140, as Lindsey Brand went full Ted Lasso for about 30 seconds previewing today's show, and actually did some drawings involving a rudimentary hockey rink.
Super deep dive on the X's and O's, Paul.
It actually looks a little Andy Warhol-ish when you look at it.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, I'm a minion and I was drawn by a second grader.
Yeah. That's what I mean, though. It's about the message more than about the actual art itself. And I think it was a great submission for today because I've been tasked with an Instagram video each and every day on that Sports Radio 1140 Instagram account. So people should follow it because sometimes I make videos like I did today that I'm super proud of and then no one sees them. It makes me feel super sad and like, you know, it's nice to get some positive reinforcement.
Sure. Well, it translates completely over again. We're Instagram account, Sports Radio 1140. Twitter is also Sports Radio 1140. You can subscribe and favorite on both those spots and check us out on the socials. So tonight we do have the Knights of the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, formerly of...
Not so mighty anymore.
Yeah, not so much. 5-4 was the last encounter between these two teams. The Golden Knights do have some positive news. Lindsay, just kind of dump it on us.
Yeah, we have some roster updates for you all. Alex Pietrangelo will be rejoining the lineup tonight, which is great because Jay Theodore is going to be out, and he's listed as day-to-day. That's what Pete DeBoer said at the earlier media availability. So Petro is going to be paired up with Alec Martinez. Then you have our usual second pair between Nick Hag and White Cloud, and then Holden and Coughlin rounding out that defensive lineup. And then forwards, we'll just kind of have to see because we know that Tomas Nosek is out due to being put on the COVID list. Usually you have Kolasar out there warming up, and so we'll see if he'll be reinserted back into the lineup. Otherwise, I wouldn't be surprised if the Golden Knights just kind of skated with one man down. We just don't know.
And tonight, it's expecting Marc-Andre Fleury.
Leonard.
Mark-Andre Fleury will sit in favor of Robin Leonard.
He was off the ice first at practice, and it's his turn in the rotation, and it's a big game for him because, you know, Fleury's held serve 5-0. Leonard's 4-1, or where is he? Yeah, 3-1-1. But we know that he's struggled over the course of his last few outings. So you want to make sure that you answer the call, especially early on, and you want to avoid that kind of dismal start that he had in his last game.
Well, he's going to need some momentum because we do roll into a weekend where we are truly on a back-to-back situation. This team is playing a very large number of games in a very short period of time due to the cancellation. So It will be the tandem goalie situation will be in place at least through this holiday weekend.
And we'll see which goal, if they stay with the same beat that they've been going, where it'll be Fleury on Saturday and then Leonard on Sunday. But just based off of how Leonard's performance is going and depending on how he does tonight, you know, I'm not saying we're to overlook the Sharks, but you know who we have on Sunday? It's the Avs. And they're going to be coming back from their own COVID protocol and pause themselves. But we're starting to get into the meat of the schedule a little bit here. And so we'll see if DeBoer starts to lean a little bit towards a guy or maybe just kind of spot starts based off of the opponent, because you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of teams when they are down and out. Just like how the Ducks will probably try to do it for the Golden Knights tonight.
Well, Mark Stone, the captain of this team, calling it the new normal, saying we're still playing hockey. We're trying to figure out how to make this happen. But it is a team that finds itself in the pole position in the Western Division and will need some real key victories here moving forward, because of all the teams right now, just in terms of the Western Conference, it is the Knights who have been the most disrupted to start this season. And not only,
but they've also been the most consistent in getting the dubs.
Correct. So how do they pull this off? Because, again, they sit for roughly 10 days. They come back. They're employing a tandem goalie system. They have injuries now with Shea Theodore, you know, Petrangelo having to sit a couple games. They get some wins.
Mm-hmm.
They've had to bounce back and forth, seeing a schedule juggled. And between them and Colorado are the only teams that will be playing in this ice pond challenge coming up here in the next nine
days. Yeah, because it's Philly and
Boston
otherwise, if that's still going to go on, because that's many moons from now, and you know, things are still fluid, especially for not just Colorado, not just us, but for Philadelphia as well. And so I think we just got to take this a game and at a time here, and that's exactly what Mark Stone is talking about. That's exactly why he has the C, because he knows how to compartmentalize. And at the end of the day, you know, these guys are playing a game that they've played their entire lives. So that system, that structure we talk all about, that's going to be needed to be relied upon, especially tonight when you're kind of helping Petrangelo get his sea legs back, get back into the rotation, because we don't know what his lungs are going to be like either, because the legs, they always want to move. Sometimes you get caught out on a long shift, especially in that second period, and things can get a little gnarly. And we saw what happened in that third period just a couple of nights ago. If the Knights aren't able to take care of every foot of the ice, the Anaheim Ducks are smart enough to start taking advantage to see when there's these little soft spots or soft moments and just the overall momentum for them to take advantage.
With the momentum that Anaheim did have in that third period, how much of that actually carries over to the second game? Because you think the second game is key in these two-game series.
Yeah, well, I think so. Because, for one, you have one team that that has to play better or find an angle or make improvements. Like, you're going to see a Duck squad that had a taste of almost victory and stealing games against anybody, especially like the Golden Knights at home, is going to make that team lick its chops. And as it, like, you know, slipped through their fingers, they want to get off to a much better start tonight. I'm expecting Jod Gibson to be in the net. He was not in the net the other night because Ryan Miller was in. Gibson got cut in the face at practice, but he drove himself here, so I expect him to start tonight. We know that he is a good, very, very capable and good goaltender, and one that if you allow him to lather up and keep shots to the outside and just kind of see all of the pucks, that's not going to translate well later on in the games when things start to get a little bit gnarly and people are trying to score more goals. But for the Knights, with that, what happened in that third period and what is my first key to success tonight in the 3-5 that I usually provide is that D zone presence. We spent a lot of time watching pucks when they were down low in our defensive zone, and I'm not really sure why. I'm thinking it's probably due to body positioning, which is also one of my keys, which is something that the Golden Knights really need to key in on, is that when you're in the D zone, you're always looking to outnumber the puck. So if the Ducks send two guys, we have to send three. But the longer that battle goes, the more everybody watches, then all of a sudden, you know, the Ducks start to drop down. And if the puck goes out, and we got three of our guys down low, and the other two that are supposed to be covering are just watching straight-legged, that's just straight up not going to equate to success in the defensive zone. So that's why you got to make sure that you're picking up guys in the slot in the high zone so they're not sneaking down, and that you don't fall asleep on your assignments. And if you get that good body positioning before you get up against the boards and into those 50-50 battles, it's just going to be easier for you not only to win the puck battle, but at least be in better position to defend if you don't.
A lot of goals given up by the Golden Knights in that third period. Not laid on Fleury, obviously, but now the attention turns to Robin Lehner.
Yep.
And Leonard's got to snap out of some sort of funk. Is it a funk? Is it a...
He's just pressing a little bit. You can tell that it's a little chaotic in the D zone. And like I said, it's about getting off to a good start. And that's why you have to go save by save. That's the life that the goaltenders have to live. And you have to have that kind of short-term memory, because he's a guy that can settle into games really well. But for a goaltender that bases so much of his style on his ability to read the play, on his ability to set up his initial angles on the shots, you can't be giving up goals like he was against the Kings the other night, when it's way to the outside on the short side or just getting beat from long range. And so if he's able to weather those first few minutes to get that confidence, to get those first few saves, that not only reflects in his game and his ability to stop the puck, but it does in the actual teams as well. Like the team feeds off of the energy that the goalies are giving them. If the goalies are hectic, the team is going to be hectic, because they're going to be like, oh, we have to play extra hard defense because our guy isn't quite on his stuff. And so it's just about him settling in, finding his game, and making sure that he's not getting too far out of position, out too far in his crease, because he's a guy that spends a lot of time in the blue paint when he's playing the best.
Do you recall that did he go to the optional skate today, or was he there on Tuesday? Because this team did not practice on Wednesday due to the protocols.
Goalies are out there. Goalies are almost always out there unless they have a reason not to be, and especially with the fact that you're not playing night in and night out. You need every single shot and puck that you possibly can get, and there's just kind of like a rhythm to it. And for a guy that, like I said, you just want to stay in it. I don't see a lot of goalies taking time off, especially from what I've read about psychologically how these guys are handling just the tandem style as of late.
It's very clear reading a lot of the articles following the game on Tuesday and then in between the two games that Anaheim's really not happy right now.
No.
They really felt like they...
Because they're doing the right things. They're not getting rewarded. That's right. The really tough stuff. And, you know, the goal that you pointed out yesterday, the third goal that the Golden Knights scored the other night, where it was just thrown in front and goes off of Marshy's skate. Like, those happen all the time, but those are the most demoralizing, because you're like, I'm picking up my guy. I'm picking up his stick. Like, I'm here. I'm in the right position. And sometimes the hockey gods do not rain success down upon you. But as I, you know, give the advice to everyone when we talk about the Golden Knights, about doing the little things, about working hard down and low in the corners, and just paying what is due to play a good hockey game, sooner or later that is going to repay you. And if the Golden Knights get lazy again, and I don't mean lazy like in terms that they're not working hard, just like mentally lazy, where they kind of check out if they get a lead, which is natural for anybody, they're going to take advantage, and they're going to be looking to kind of storm the barn right away here, because, like I said, playing from behind just changes your whole mentality about the game. You have to get back to neutral before you can start scoring goals, and sometimes you run out of time before the final horn blows.
I think the interesting part about tonight is that we see Shade leave the lineup, and they get, you know, Pietrangelo back amazingly.
Our power play is going to be severely affected without Theodore.
Right, so you've got a couple of interchangeable parts. I think you're going to, I think within the first couple of shifts for Petro, you're going to see whether or not he's really game ready, or whether this is an 80%
kind of play. It's going
to be rough
a little bit. It's all about getting good breakouts for him, because, you know, the offense will come, but his job first and foremost is getting the puck out of the defensive zone. And that was something that he struggled with, you know, early in the early games, which happened to be against Anaheim. So if the guys are going up the boards for every single breakout, that is a problem. He needs to make sure that if he gets that possession of the puck, he doesn't make that first pass below the goal line, that he instead skates it out to that face-off dot and then makes the decision, do I pass or do I take it myself out of the zone? It's just about getting better timing of your decisions, because sometimes it's the right decision, it's just in the wrong depth of the pool.
I think the Knights are understanding of the fact that they let a three-goal lead go away and right. still ended up getting the points. I think that was, I think if there was anything that was emphasized in maybe a team Zoom call or whatever right. they managed to get in front of them, like, guys, this doesn't happen very often.
Well, and it's not a hard fix because the Ducks had 15 takeaways. Like, you turn the puck over a lot. A lot of it was self-inflicted. So again, another key to success for me tonight is minimizing those turnovers, making sure that you're making one less pass. You're not getting too fancy. You're making the simple hockey play, and that you're infiltrating past the first layer, especially in the offensive zone, where you're not starting to, oh, I got the blue line, now I'm going to cut laterally and then try to make something happen. No, because if somebody just happens to disrupt you and knock the puck away from you, guess what? Your deer caught flat-footed and there's nobody supporting back there. It's one of the worst places to make a turnover in the zone. And so by getting pucks hash marks or deeper and running the offense that way and making sure that you're trapping their guys and their legs and making them tired and therefore enabling them to make poor decisions, that's where the success is going to come. And it's also going to make John Gibson sit in his crease and his stance a lot longer.
2 points would mean a lot for the Ducks tonight because they would thrust themselves immediately into third place. That's how tight
they're
this division is right now. And
mm-hmm.
so they know it. They're certainly aware. Linz, do you have a quote? Are you any more keys for us?
I have multiple keys, but we don't have time. So we'll do the rest of the keys in the next hour. But in terms of the Fouche quote of the day, comes from Richard Branson, you know, Virgin Mobile, Virgin
Richard
Records.
Richard Branson, the guy
also
who owns
bought
the island.
Exactly. Bought a casino here not too long ago, just down the street. He goes, "It is only by being bold that you get anywhere. If you are a risk taker, then the art is to protect the downside. Protect the D zone. Make sure you're minding your assignments and riding the wave." Richard Branson couldn't say it better.
See what happens tonight over at the Fortress as the Knights finish up a very long homestand against the Anaheim Ducks. And we'll have more hockey talk coming up later in hour number two of the show. All right, coming up next, the NBA storylines continue to crank through as we've gone past all the trades. And now it's all about the play. And very quietly, a team to our north, just up by 15, has made its way into the tops of the Western Conference standings. The Utah Jazz are 20-5. We'll talk about the Jazz sizzling start with KSL's Alex Keery, good friend of the program from Salt Lake City. That's coming up next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Thursday afternoon. While the NBA tends to revolve around the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James, and apparently ESPN's infatuation with the Philadelphia-Boston matchup.
No, you don't say.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Very quietly, just up I-15, the Utah Jazz are sitting atop the Western Conference with the best record in the West at 20-5. Joining us to talk about it is friend of the program. He's a sports director at KSL Radio in Salt Lake City. Alex Keery joins us. Alex, thanks for coming back.
Paul, Lindsay, what's going on, you guys?
Well, we wish we had as successful as a team rolling as you guys do in Utah. And I know that most of this success is attributed to Donovan Mitchell. He's the heart and soul of this team, has been for a while. But how has he elevated his game so far in this season? And how have opponents attempted to stop him?
Well, it's funny that he's been like this. I fear that we're just talking about it is going to ruin everything. Like, you guys are going to jinx everything by us even talking about it. The thing is that quiet part of it is almost nice. Quinn Snyder loves, the head coach loves the fact that people just kind of take them for granted. Every team they played against this year kind of goes, man, these guys are really good. So many coaches have said this is the best team we've faced so far. I don't know if they're the best team in the NBA, but they're the best team we've faced so far this year. And, you know, Utah has a history of fielding pretty good teams, average to good teams, and, you know, in the late 90s, really good teams, you know, with the Stockton Malone era. But Donovan Mitchell's been this good for the past year and a half. That's the honest truth. These are his numbers for the past year and a half. And we saw that crazy series he had against Denver in the Western Conference semis last year, where he was basically going blow for blow, 50-point games with Jamal Murray. So this is a guy that we've seen before. It's just now that people are talking about him because his play is matching also. The rest of the team is catching up. And so you have this record that is 20-5 that they haven't had since the Stockton and Malone days. And around here, people are talking about that. That's the thing that they see, because usually Donovan will have these 25-point average, you know, kind of a season, which is what he's had last year and this year. But the thing now is Mike Conley's playing better. He's hurt right now, but he's playing statistically some of the best basketball in the entire league. Rudy Gobert is always flying under the radar as one of the best defensive players. But you think about Jordan Clarkson off the bench, he's probably going to be, you know, the front runner for sixth man of the year. All the pieces are coming together for Quinn Snyder's kind of mad scientist offense, which is just really doing everything with tons of skill. They've always been this good. They just haven't been able to kind of figure it out. They've added a couple pieces in the offseason to make them really good.
Alex, and you mentioned those names, and you roll through the roster there, and I think that's one of the things that's helped the Jazz this year, too, is the fact that as you look around the league, you know, you've seen players move back and forth and back and forth, but the core of this group has been together for quite a while now.
Yeah, specifically Donovan and Rudy. And Mike Conley came in last year, and at $33 million a year, everybody expected him to, you know, light the world on fire, and it took him a year. I mean, really, the best basketball he's played since probably, you know, those glory days in Memphis are right now. And I think that most people just don't know how important it is that Quinn Snyder's offense takes a lot of time to figure out. It does. It just takes a lot of time. They brought Derek Favors back because they got a guy who already understood the system, and they gave that extra effort. And because last year the drop-off when Rudy Gobert would go out of the game was huge. They just, you know, the other guys coming off the bench couldn't match anything when it came to that first team to the second team, and they fixed all of that. So I think that they have guys that understand Quinn Snyder. They understand Quinn Snyder's system. They have played together for a long time, and it's taken a while for them to kind of come around, but they've got a great mixture of pretty young guys, a superstar in the making with Donovan Mitchell, and then some old guys that they always love bringing in these older guys to kind of buoy up these younger fellas and kind of just get the timing down. That's really what it is in a Quinn Snyder offense.
And when we think back, you know, a few months ago and how it's been like, you know, that, like you said, a secret to how Utah has kind of been building. But Rudy Gobert's name was obviously pushed to the forefront in the early days of COVID in terms of the NBA shutting down. And there was a huge drama thing with that. I'm not saying I attribute success to adversity because I think that's incorrect. But there's something about going through kind of an in-house tiff and working through it together and then seeing some success. Do you think that kind of process, that those few months where it was very, you know, touch and go between him, Gobert and Mitchell, has helped this team and we're seeing some of the success from that now?
These guys, from the beginning of all of this, when all that went down and Donovan and Rudy had their semi-public, you know, kind of grumpiness at each other, I think that people really just started to realize that people in locker rooms aren't best friends. And you guys know this. I mean, it's just like, it's not about that. I mean, there's so many guys who hate each other across the history of the sports landscape that have just been amazing together on the field, can't stand each other really off the field. I can't tell you two more different guys off the field or off the court than John Stockton and Karl Malone. Those guys did not jam. They did not hang together. They did not share the same interests. And then, yet when they got on the floor, it was the best pick and roll combination you could ever imagine. So I think that they channeled a lot of that and said, look, we're pros. And some of this stuff, maybe we're not going to hang out and play video games every night. But what we are going to do is we're going to know exactly what our goals are. Their goals on the court are the exact same. You know, Rudy Gobert stuff, he just, anything that can light a fire under Rudy Gobert, we love it here in Utah. It's just like put him super far down on the All-Star list. Or don't even make him an All-Star. Put that chip on his shoulder because then he plays more angry. And that's the way people like, you know, Rudy Gobert. He's not going to – you don't want him to score 25 points a game. You know, that's not what his deal is. Let him be that insane defender in the middle. And he just loves playing with that grudge. And I think that Donovan has always been a pro. All these guys have been they've lived under pros, starting with Quinn Snyder, and I think that they're just getting better now. They always take so dang long to get going, and then they end up being an okay playoff team. And instead, now they've kind of gelled really early in the season, which is not like them. Which is, I think, why a lot of people are really excited here in Salt Lake.
KSL Sports Director Alex Curry joining us here on the Playmakers, and I'm assuming you've circled the next three dates on the calendar over the next 4 days. You could be seeing, quote-unquote, and I'm sure this might be the storyline, possible dream scenarios in the NBA Finals with Milwaukee tomorrow night, Miami right in a back-to-back, and then Philadelphia. Two of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference staring at the Jazz on the road.
The good news is it's 100 feet from here across the street here in downtown. Like that, they love that they're all at home. They've already beaten the Bucks at their place by 15 points less than a month ago. And I think that they feel like they could go blow to blow with anybody. And this is one of the rare, this is one of the arenas where you can actually have fans here. And it's not a ton, but it's still, over a couple thousand, and that matters. And those games matter at home. The real test is going to be after those three Eastern Conference guys is the back-to-back down in L.A. against the Clippers. That's the one that the Jazz want to get back. They want to beat the Clippers. They want to beat the Nuggets. They want to beat the Lakers, of course. And that's the thing that matters the most to people around here, especially the Lakers.
It makes sense considering they're the defending champions, and then just, you know, the lights of L.A. are always drawing everybody's attention. And so are you more worried about the Lakers or the Clippers at this point? Because we talk about the Battle of L.A. all the time. But if you're already, you know, starting blood feuds with both of them, who would you rather face, or who do you think that the Jazz are best equipped to deal with?
Well, Jazz already played the Clippers once this year and beat them. I think that they're always hesitant against the Lakers. Any LeBron team is going to be really good. They got to get over this hump with the Nuggets. I think that they still have this thing in their head, and that was the team that broke that 15-game win streak that they had here most recently, and then they fired up another little mini win streak now. They've won 16 of 17, and the team that seems to always kind of get them, and the guy who always seems to get them is Nikola Jokic. So I think that they're looking at this, and they just want to get this West figured out. And these Eastern teams can come in, and it's nice because all those are going to be very highly publicized. Like you guys mentioned, you know, out East, they love talking about the 76ers. They, you know, the Heat have their own following, and the Bucks are, of course, kind of the odds-on favorite out East. So this is a test for them. Every game is a test for them. Good to get them at home, but that back-to-back against the Clippers a week from yesterday is going to be huge for them. And they go two games in a row over 3 days, and so – that's going to be their biggest test, but, man, they hate the Lakers around here. It's funny to watch.
Good look at the Utah Jazz, tops of the Western Conference. Our friend Alex Curry from KSL in Salt Lake City. Alex, thanks for hanging out today, man.
You guys hang in there.
All right, Utah Jazz 20-5, and yes, a big test tomorrow. It's Milwaukee for the Jazz, Miami in a back-to-back, and then on President's Day they have Philadelphia. So
who's Giannis going to guard?
Right, no easy order there when you're looking at the 76ers, Bucks, and Heat. And as he mentioned, they do have a two-game set. One of those rare NBA, when they did the scheduling, they were going to do some of the NHL kind of
back-to-backs,
and so they play the Clippers two times at Staples. To round out February.
Hey, but that's the thing. They get off to a good start. You don't have to be pressing as much. You just gel earlier. It's a weird year. It might be the year.
Yeah, well, for the Jazz, 20-5 and tops of the Western Conference. We'll keep tabs on that. Probably check in with Alex as the season rolls on. All right, coming up next, we take a look at those foods you just never get tired of.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Today is National Roast Day, unofficially.
Roast?
National Roast Day. No.
Or as in like, roasting. I'm going to insult you, but yes. It's such a good insult that you cannot be offended.
Correct. So on social media right now, Wendy's is offering everybody a chance to get roasted by the Wendy's social media team.
Oh, I would not play with that certain amount of fire, because that is a good social media team.
I didn't check it out right before we got on the air, but the Vegas people who run the Vegas account here in this city with the blue check mark asked
Vegas.com?
Asked Wendy's to roast them like Las Vegas. So I did not check it. I'm going to go check that one out. But it leads me into this little food discussion to where there is a report out of FanSided had put this together that Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich and Phillies catcher JT Realmuto are very good buddies, especially when they play together for the Marlins. And when they played in the minor league system, their diets consisted of one thing, Chipotle.
Creatures of habit, the athletes are.
For 142 days in a row.
Oh, yeah. Girl,
I'm not
all about that.
See, and I don't think I could do that because my palate has gone beyond chicken nuggets and fries like my kids. I like to eat different things.
Right. But for me, I don't eat for pleasure. I just eat for sustenance. I think that's it. That's a huge thing. And when, especially with athletes, and baseball players and hockey players, to be totally honest, that routine and just that familiarity and that I don't have to think about this because I know what I'm going to eat and I know what it's going to do to my body. Like it's a huge stressor at least for me. Like right now I'm in I'll eat the same thing every day for like 6 months, like the same meal every single day. Right now I'm going through a broccoli phase.
Okay.
Every
night. Wrong with that. That's good.
It's like the first healthy one I've had in like forever.
Broccoli's perfect.
But I'll go like peanut butter and jelly toast, baked potato and a salad, like every day for 6 months, or like wow. banana and Nutella every day for 6 months. And like I said, it's more about checking off the box for me because I don't know how to make that much stuff. And so if I don't do this.
Right. But as an athlete, you get this. It's like, if I'm going to go on a roadie, I'm going to go hit up Subway or Jimmy John's,
right,
or whatever.
Because you know that consistency is going to be there, because I'll go to any restaurant. It could be the nicest restaurant ever, and like, yep, this is the steak, this is how, these are the french fries, we do it. But if I'm not familiar with it, I'm probably not going to order anything because I probably won't like it, and so I'll just like not do it. So you just go to what's familiar, and like Chipotle, they're everywhere, and it's healthy ish as long as you get the right toppings.
Sure. I've got their app. I use their app. I'm just like 142 days in a row at Chipotle. I'm like,
right.
Like, they must have.
Some days you're like,
they must have literally just like lived around the corner.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What do you want to do today? Oh, dude, Chipotle.
That's okay. What I mean. You get home from practice, or because you know them, it's like, you know, a game almost every single day. We go, we get up, we shower, we do this. We are at Chipotle by 10:30 a.m. They have our order. We pick it up. We go to the thing. It's all part of the flow. So it's like the food is fuel thing really helps that kind of mindset.
I do like their burrito bowls.
I don't think I've ever had a burrito bowl. I've only had
burritos. It's literally just
it's
the filling.
Last time I was at Chipotle, it was with you. It was like a year ago.
It was no, I've been there since then.
Yeah. What's something that you've like had a run with? Because we all get like, oh, I'm coffee ice cream for me. Like right now, I'm super into coffee ice cream as well.
In college, it was always, and I don't go this hard, but it was like 2 pieces of sausage, 2 pieces of toast. Every morning.
Right?
That's all of us.
It's nice.
Every morning.
It's nice. You know what you expect, but then the days that it's like not up to your standard, you're like, what is this? This is what I get every time. We have an expectation.
Right.
Yeah. Food is fuel, Paul.
Love broccoli. All right. Some reports today about the Raiders and a specific receiver. We'll have that for you coming up in 5 minutes as the Playmakers rolls on.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Hour number two of the big show. Paul Leihander here, 6.345 feet away, socially distant, is Lindsey Brown. As we have discovered that Lindsey is on a broccoli kick, please do not send us cases of broccoli.
No, because it'll go bad.
Yeah.
But I am, it's the most vegetables I've probably ever had in my body, like
green,
ever.
Like green vegetables,
yes,
too.
Yes, I've never been like more healthy than I am right now, but it's also like on the fringes of unhealthiness. So I'm like, I'm glad that I'm in the broccoli wheelhouse, but I'm also scared because once I start going a different direction, sometimes I cannot return it. But broccoli is that good. Broccoli is that good. It's so good. And I drench it in butter, so it's fine. That's mostly
So you kill off the healing power of the broccoli.
First of all, it's smart balance. But I let's just say I'm liberal with the application of said spread.
Yeah, I'll have a Big Mac and a diet Sprite.
Hey, if you're gonna go big, go home.
Right.
That's awesome. Go big or go home.
But you don't eat avocado, though.
No, never tried it. Doesn't look good.
You need to make that happen.
Nope, probably not.
You're eating green already.
I'm eating salad too.
You're in the family.
I even buy croutons now. I don't put that many on there. I try to do like 6-ish.
So you eat dry bread.
With actual bread. I'll eat the crouton.
Listen to what my meal is right now. Okay.
I do the broccoli. I do the salad with like 5 or 6 croutons along with my French dressing, which is not fat free. And then I do the four thing of crescent rolls.
I'm sorry, you're built like a javelin, Lindsey.
Yeah, correct.
I'm like fat free,
legit,
not fat free.
Well, like I said, the broccoli's organic, but it's organic. And I don't even go for the organic. It's just the one that is consistent, one that I like.
Sure.
And so it's about familiarity.
Yep.
And then I either do like the little mini crescent rolls where it's like 4 of them, or I eat half of a loaf of the Cheesecake Factory bread.
All right, so
boom,
carbs. You're golden.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
I'm like basically a vegetarian almost, besides when I have spaghetti.
Basically a vegetarian.
Bread and dairy, and along with like my 2 gallons, I'm even drinking more milk than usual. I usually drink like 2 gallons a week myself.
Oof.
Yeah, if I ever go lactose intolerance, it's over for me.
So the person doesn't eat a lot of cheese.
No, but I consume a lot of dairy.
Right.
A lot between the smart balance, which is it technically dairy?
Butter?
Well, it's smart balance, so it's not butter.
margarine.
What's the worst? When I order the Smart Balance and then they're like, we're out, but we're going to replace it with a different one and I won't eat it. So now I have like two or three. I can't believe it's not butter. So would you like those?
I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah, because it's not the same.
It's probably got soy in it though, right?
I don't know. Maybe. I'll look on the label.
I don't know. Perhaps.
I want to donate it, but I know that you can't really donate stuff like that.
It's a little difficult.
Yeah, because it's perishable. Understandable. Yes. But I don't want to be wasteful either.
Well, you tell them that, listen, don't replace it.
I know there's a checkbox on the line, and sometimes I forget to do it.
You literally are playing grocery roulette.
Yeah. No, legit. And that's literally like the last thing I want to do, because if they don't have my specific type, I don't want it. I will go get it somewhere else.
Oh, absolutely. If I don't find the things that I'm looking for on the list, by the way, never shop hungry. Just saying.
Yeah. Yep.
It's the worst.
Yep.
I'll come up with $10 worth of extra stuff that I have no business bringing into the house.
All of the ingredients, and they give you the wrong cut of beef. That's what happened to me with pot roast a few weeks ago. And I was just like, oh, I'll go get the beef. And
you just go walk in the store and go to the deli count, go to the butcher?
Paul.
Literally is like, I'm making pot roast.
Some
they will
people
tell you what
have
to buy.
Problems public speaking, and other people have problems walking into grocery stores. I am the latter.
Write it down on a piece of paper and flash it out.
I know.
You can be in and out.
But sometimes I walk in and I'm like, these people are watching me. I need to like keep lapping. And then I'm like, I've already done two laps. They're going to think I'm weird. And then I leave.
I promise you, at the stores where you shop, that's the least of your issues.
Yeah. I just pick up my groceries most of the time. I make friends with them. I just don't like in the moment, like decisions is not my thing. And I'm afraid to ask questions. That's what we're working with therapists about.
You're a goalie.
I know. But that's the thing is like
snap decisions.
But that's not a snap decision because you're not deciding whether or not I should take this puck and dump it. I'm dealing with the weather. I'm not controlling the weather.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
I gotcha. All right. Time for football at 4.
Oh, the funniest of footballs, Russell Wilson. Is he the next quarterback domino to fall? I don't know. We'll have to ask Ciara.
Yeah, we will talk about Russ Wilson here in a second. There is a report out this afternoon from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network that the Raiders will release Tyrell Williams at the start of the new league year.
What position does he play?
Wide receiver.
Well, does that mean we're re-signing Nelly?
Torn labrum because he missed the entire season. He could be.
I need all hairs.
He'll be good. He'll be healthy. I'm getting to that. He'll be healthy in 2 to 3 weeks. In 2019, he signed a 4-year deal with the Raiders worth $44
million. Yeah.
Had a great first season with the team.
Yeah.
Very solid, you know. And then he played with a foot injury pretty much the entire year.
Right. They might circle back.
They could.
But just not at that number.
It's $11.5 million that comes off the books if they don't sign him.
Right. And they need cap space.
$11.5 million. If I take 60% of that, I think I could probably lock somebody down.
Yeah.
Or if Williams could come back under a different number.
Yeah. Give Nelly a number. I can't refuse. So we can just kind of gloss over the fact that nobody was inspired enough to try in the second half of the season, even though they were in playoff contention.
If Williams is healthy, he'll get a look somewhere else.
Oh, 100%.
For sure. 100%. He absolutely will. But, you know, he came from the Chargers, worked his way up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the Raiders, one good season, one lost season, essentially. The money's just too rich at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. He's expendable, especially with how much they've invested in talent. And like I said, you got to find money to sign Nelly or other people.
Yeah, so that's the report coming out today. He's going to be healthy, though, in a couple of weeks. And again, we'll hit the free agency market. Again, if you need a receiver in this league, which a lot of teams do, I mean, you have a lot of young quarterbacks right now in this league and another crop of them coming in.
Sure hands
quickly,
help a lot.
That's the truth. You need trusty targets in this league.
But staying on the field is the most important thing, too.
Yeah, and that is the unfortunate part about Williams, who was going to be a contributor this year, and just the injury bug bit him.
But you play 1 year injury-free. Usually that kind of resets everybody's mind about you and just showing like, yeah, I can get back on the field. Now, if he has another season where he gets injured again, then we're in a much different weather balloon than we originally thought.
Right. Unfortunately for Williams, it'll have to be one of those prove-it deals.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a low-ball prove-it deal.
Like what Nelly played for, right?
Correct.
Was it like 1 year eight or something like that?
$1.5 million.
Oh, damn.
Aguilar was a steal.
I mean, understood that. I didn't realize
thievery.
That we were going with grand larceny here.
Thievery.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yes, they're...
That's what I mean. You have a couple of drops. Like and just kind of depends on what the public image is, what the PR mill is spinning out, because that can really affect your value. Because it gets people like us riled up, and we're the ones that talk to the masses about it, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, they're totally right.
they possibly could be. So that's the latest news coming out of Raiders camp, at least the first bit of Raiders news. So we've had Jason LaConfora on before, CBS Sports NFL insider, who wrote an article yesterday, sort of, basically suggesting that if there was something going to be happening, and the Raiders stories keep on giving when it comes to landing spots for Russell Wilson, that a perfect fit, a clear fit for Russell Wilson would be right here in Las Vegas.
Derek Carr's on the way out, isn't he?
It's the second straight week of calls of stories
that we've either heard a big-time quarterback name attached to it or that his brother saying they're taking calls on him, which is fine.
Tom Pelissero doesn't put out a report. He worked for the league.
Yes, the Shield.
Yes. Doesn't put out reports like these things that keep coming out about, yes, there are sniffs, yes, there are things happening. These are not rumors. There is somebody talking. And it's not Adele. You could figure it out, you know, in some of the other places where I've worked, you could kind of figure out who was saying things to which reporters and whatnot.
Read the tea leaves.
Right. And you could kind of go through the smoke screens and whatnot. There's a reason why some of this stuff is getting out there. And some of it could be total stanching. The draft is coming up.
Yep.
We do have the new league year starting.
People will show up to like random pro days where they have no intention of picking someone just to put up a smoke screen. Right. Happens all the time.
Yeah, the NBA was notorious for it early on with all the Euro imports.
Yeah.
Now it seems like it's an NFL. Wow, that came out of nowhere. And then that draft pick that's in the third round ends up being Hunter Renfro.
Correct.
You know, Max Crosby.
Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, precisely. So as the trade winds blow about Russell Wilson, and there's a lot of backstory going on about Russ right now.
And a GQ article that was published today.
Correct. With all the news that's coming out about him, LaConfora speculates that the Raiders would be a good landing spot for him.
I would love Russell Wilson down here. Wouldn't you?
Would it change your mind about the idea of bringing Deshaun here?
Well, I would think you have to do one or the other, right? So it's
okay. It's a pseudo answer, but.
But Russell would probably be cheaper. Like, I want Deshaun because Deshaun's the biggest fish and with the highest ceiling in the prime. But he's gonna cost a lot. So if it gets a little bit too rich, or if the Houston Texans are being that stupid and saying we're not gonna trade him, we're gonna try to wait this out, which they will eventually lose. They're only hurting themselves. But if they're not willing to budge right now, and the Raiders are like, we need to make a move at quarterback here. Russell Wilson is a hell of a consolation prize. Don't you think?
But he wants
offensive line help because he's running a lot, but he hasn't had weapon. I mean, he's had DK and Tyler, but we're very unproven here compared
more,
to that.
He would have more here and a
but he'd
much,
be given everything.
A much stronger line in front of him.
Yeah. He would be given everything.
But again, we know the defense has to be addressed here in Las Vegas.
We have to address the elephant in the room as well with his wife Sierra, and her prowess as an entertainer. Think she would want a residency here? You don't think that would be part of the recruiting thing?
Oh. If this was, given
the entertainment industry right now, too. I mean, I read the GQ article and she was talking about, you know, Russell is the football. And she's like, sometimes I have to go, you know, on a private wedding thing because she's an entertainer. And like, you know, they pay huge dollars for people like that. 1-2-Step is a banger. Lose Control is a banger. And so that's one of the cool things about Vegas, and especially for like power, like entertainer sports couples like they are. You could set up here. It's close to LA. They have a house there. It's close to San Diego. They got a house there. They got a house in Mexico. They're brand builders too.
Yeah, they could jump off in a number of places. And with the relationships that the Raiders have with MGM and Caesars, she'd have a million places
right.
to play.
And like I said, it's not like the industry, their industry isn't hurting either. And that would be like such a kind of a perfect situation for both of them. And based off of how many stories we've seen about Russell, like earlier in the week, I'm like, what are they doing? But Russell is talking a little bit more than he has in the past. And I think maybe there's a little bit more steam and traction behind him not wanting to be up in Seattle anymore than I originally thought.
Well, yeah, and I think so, too. It's like we were like, this is just more of that off-season post-Super Bowl speculation.
Sure, we're looking for something other than Tom being drunk.
Right. We're fishing a lot of places, but there are, you know, reports out this morning.
Four straight days.
You know, when Wilson went on Dan Patrick's program on TV a couple of days ago, that Seahawks management were like, hey, man, you need to chill out, at least behind the scenes.
Keep it in-house, right?
That's what they're saying. Right,
so
exactly.
So maybe he's, you know, throwing some minds in the lake to try to make the waters, make them, you know, speed up a little bit, or at least put this in their mind that, hey, I'm okay with you guys maybe fishing me out there.
Does this, though, and this comes back circular, I mean, very quickly, too, does a Russell Wilson put you in a position to chase a Super Bowl championship, to chase the Lombardi?
I 100% think it does. And it's not even about the on-the-field stuff.
Okay, so...
culture-wise, Paul.
So, as we've talked about teams making big moves, and we've read all the analysis for the past couple of weeks talking about this quarterback kind of carousel, quarterback kind of upheaval that's happening in the league right now, because Dallas is still dealing with Dak, too.
Idiots.
And if you franchise a guy for like an eighth year or whatever it is, you clearly don't believe in the guy. So it's time to
franchise him one more. He might sit out, too.
It's time to cut bait and move on from Dak, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be a possibility. I really don't see it. I don't think Jerry is that idiotic, but he's proud though. But he needs to commit to him. Because
yes.
If he's not going to commit to him,
right.
There's no point.
Because if you franchise him, take one more, I think Dak's like, I'm done. I'm done with this. You, like I said, there's a line there right now that hasn't been crossed, but it's very close to being crossed.
Okay, so does Derek Carr give this team a chance to win a Super Bowl? Right now, this is the argument that has been about Derek Carr for the past couple of years, and we know he had a very good season this past season of 8-8.
Anybody can catch fire, Paul. Anybody can have a good year. He's shown the capability. He was almost an MVP before he got injured, and honestly, I think it is. But it's about how perfect of a situation and how many things have to go right for that to start going. I think that there are fewer things that have to go right for Russell to be like that. Because first of all, the belief in himself.
Sure, he has the ring already. He's been there.
Exactly. And he's been there. And the big problem with this team right now is the culture. And we've learned based off of what with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. I'm not saying it's the same thing with Pete Carroll and with Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson is one of those guys that is a beacon for and a leader of men. And because he leads by example, he lives by example. He said in the GQ article, me and Sierra wake up every morning and just talk about how lucky we are to be here and all the joy that we're going to experience. And we're going to, you know, do our checklist for the day. Like, it is a very intentional life that he lives. And for a team, a young team, we just saw what happened in Tampa. If they get the right flame, all of the moths go. And especially for a guy that has had the success, a guy that has been told no, a shorter quarterback. He wasn't supposed to be anything. He walked into that camp and won that job because the Seahawks went out and signed Matt Flynn and Tarvaris Jackson to compete for the job, and he won it in his rookie year. And so that's where I think he's not a better option than Deshaun, but he offers a different set of skills. And I think Deshaun's a great leader, but there's just, like you said, Russell's won a game. Or won a ring. He's been in the league longer. He's been in the MVP conversation. And he's a very, like, viable, you know, quarterback type that Gruden be, like, just salivating over. Because you cannot say that Derek Carr is the same athlete as Russell Wilson or Deshaun.
No, clearly. No, there's a scrambling athlete that comes with
Russ. And what happened when Marcus Mariota played for that one game for the majority of that game?
The Raiders definitely changed their offense.
Because it diversified. It's the same reason why the Rams traded Jared Goff, or that they weren't really going with him, because Wolford offered them a different option other than just dropping back into the pocket and slinging it. And so... and with the improvising types of quarterbacks, you can get a little bit lighter on your offensive line, and not too much, because obviously that's a huge problem of what he's talking about in Seattle, but just kind of diversifies your entire outlook and your entire offense. And it's an offense that's already pretty good. What if you could take it into a top three, Paul? Then maybe the defense pressure is a little alleviated, because we're scoring, you know, 7 out of 10 times instead of 4 out of 10, well, which is still successful.
Full no trade clause for Russ. So much like Deshaun Watson, he gets to pick where he wants to go if indeed that happens. And this is
a no brainer for him.
You smell some smoke and you go rush and see
where
the fire is. And right now that fire is Russell Wilson.
And you don't think that the community aspect of considering the Walter Payton man of the year, you don't think he would do a hell of a lot for the Valley? And he sees all of the areas that we could use help with that, too. He's a very aware human being.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Matt Stafford is out talking right now about the trade and how he broached the subject with Detroit. Didn't realize, to be honest, how much kind of... there was a loyalty, clearly,
Well, they picked you first overall.
To Detroit, and he knew that, you know, when they turned the team over finally, and, you know, we know what happened. It just wasn't there. You know, the Lions.
They thought Jim Schwartz wasn't the answer, and that's where it all started going downhill.
Right. And so as they started moving bodies and moving things around, Stafford met with the team ownership and said basically, hey, you know what? I'd like to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, okay. Well,
I can only imagine the stress leading up to that conversation. It's like asking somebody for a raise, except worse. I want to leave you.
Face of the franchise.
Uh-huh.
And it's like,
paid him big time money.
It's like, okay, we'll make it happen. And they pull the team. They do the deal with the Rams. And he even found that was incredibly just wild in itself.
Well, it's the ideal spot. You're like, I just wanted to leave and go give myself a chance, but you're giving me the best chance in many ways. It's a sign of respect. But I've heard a lot of these guys, especially when they're taken like first overall, and that weight of feeling like they owe the franchise a ring, right?
There's loyalty involved. There absolutely is in all aspects.
There's loyalty in terms of like you people are my people, and then there's the weight of I have to pay you back because you chose me first overall. And remember when we were choosing quarterbacks first overall, he was right before Sam Bradford was chosen. Bradford was the last quarterback where they made like insane amounts of money before they even played a snap. You know, where they were making like 50 mil.
Right, there was no real
rookie
slot. It was
after,
yeah,
Bradford was the last one to get that huge amount of guaranteed money and just kind of having that. And especially for Detroit, you know, he was seen so much as the savior because it's not like they've had any success and then it just didn't change. They went completely defeated that where they didn't get any games or didn't win any games. Wasn't that right? Right. He was there.
Yes.
And so
he was part of that.
It must feel like very much like you're giving up on it. Even though you know that's not how it is, but I feel like that's probably how he felt.
Man, it's like,
are
you okay with me leaving?
Right.
I mean, that's
right. It's hard to do. It's hard to leave home because the thing is, it's not a guarantee if you go out that you're going to find what you're seeking.
Well, this past season, he said, I mean, and obviously we know about the situation with his wife and how she was sick too. And, and he, apparently, this past season, played with a torn UCLA in his thumb, as well as in his elbow, and cartilage damage, and a tear. This guy,
but that's Mike, what I mean. He will play. I will go and perform for you because he was the highest paid quarterback for a long time.
How much more respect do you have for Stafford, knowing that? And again, there's a sort of warrior mentality, and I know you played with it too when you played in goal, Linz. You know where you would play hurt. Mm-hmm. Not say things, roll through the pain, Advil up, ice up, come right back out and do it again. In, you know, you played hockey, he played football, just two brutally physical sports.
Mm-hmm. But that's it. It's hard because you have that loyalty or that indebtedness to the ownership group itself, and then you also have it to your teammates in the locker room. I think that's also a huge pull as well
because of how bad the Lions were. Like, well, I don't want them to be as bad as they could be if I'm
right.
not there.
Well, and then it's just like, you know, that you see you're in the locker room with them every day. You're going, you're practicing, you're lifting, you're doing all this stuff. You're seeing all the sacrifices that everybody else makes and makes in that moment, and then just over the course of their entire lives. Because you just think about all the things that could have gone wrong that make you not here. And so I think that plays a lot more into the injury stuff of just kind of toughing it out. And it's a culture thing too. And it's a very fine line with toxicity as well. But when you're getting paid as much money as he is, it's hard to be like, I want to sit out. And especially for him as a prospect, Utah, right?
Like Georgia.
Georgia. Yes. I'm mixing him up with Alex Smith.
Yeah.
You know, he was the number one overall because of his arm talent, not necessarily of the success. And so there's a lot of things that go into what fuels someone to push through that or to keep coming back to a team that isn't doing well. And the thing is that you were chosen. You were the first guy off the board. And so it must have felt so just counterintuitive, just so anti what he stands for, because based off of what we've seen and what he's battled through each and every season, this looks like a white flag to him, not everybody else, because it's much different, like culture, clearly, because we're moving around parts all over the place. But the culture is not doesn't have to live with the weight of it. You do. You're the only one that lives with that weight. Like his family's born there, you know, all the ties. Like Michigan's a good spot.
Yeah.
It's beautiful there.
Undeniable. He's the new new LA Rams quarterback. Quick note here, the Super Bowl MVP Tom Brady is going to have minor knee surgery. Nothing crazy.
Scope it up.
Nothing crazy. Something something they had planned to do. So no injury. He wasn't playing monster hurt. Just a little cleanup. TB12, you know, a little.
Guerrero will have the plyometric bands in there like mere minutes after it's done.
Well, yesterday was about, you know, self-medication.
Yeah. So. You don't even need to get this guy any pain meds. He's still drunk.
Yeah.
Who knows? I wonder how much he actually drank. I bet it's not much because his body, I don't think, usually puts itself through that type of abuse.
Yes. All right. I'm going to dissect a little bit. We're going to come back here in a few moments. Talk a little bit about pesky sports athletes, the guys who chirp and taunt and trash talk constantly. I watched a video that was kind of interesting. I'm going to get Lindsay's thoughts on it. Plus, the governor has put out some dates in terms of perhaps getting some people back into the stands at T-Mobile Arena for hockey and gatherings for future events. We'll dig into that a little bit. We're just getting details on that, and we'll have that for you coming up on the other side here. It's the Playmakers.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Iander, Lindsey Brown with you on this Thursday afternoon. If you missed any portion of the show or you want to subscribe to the show because, hey, you just found us and you're like, wow, these guys are kind of interesting.
And funny, obviously.
But I can't listen for all 2 hours at one time because my commute in this town is like 13 minutes long.
Yeah.
You can listen to us at night while you're relaxing at home and you've lost all your money like I do from time to time.
Or if you're hiding in the bathroom from your kids and it's a half hour in. And
how long do you use the bathroom?
Well, sometimes you go in there to do business, and sometimes you just go in there to pretend to do business.
Okay,
right?
So before I get completely off subject, you need to download the radio.com app. It's free through the Google Play Store or iTunes App Store. Then to favorite us, you search out CBS Sports Radio 1140 and hit the heart in the upper portion of the screen. You can subscribe to this show on the daily, as well as the weekly Nightcap podcast, which covers all things Golden Knights and the NHL, hosted by Lindsey Brown.
I hear it's pretty good, Paul.
It's a decent show.
Thank you.
There's no doubt about that.
Thank you.
So the governor spoke while we were talking about Tyrell Williams of the Raiders and Russell Wilson perhaps joining the Raiders. The governor talked about capacity limits as we're all dealing with the pandemic right now. 50% capacity now, starting on Monday, for libraries, museums, art galleries, aquariums, and zoos. Public gatherings and events can go to 100 people or 35% of fire code capacity. So if you're getting married soon, you don't have to cut down that guest list as hard.
Yeah. Well, 35, you know, is a great number to land on right in the middle.
Right. I know. Yep. Really weird. Also, indoor dining and bev service, 35% capacity. Also, places of worship. So your church, synagogue, other school gymnasium, wherever you happen to
worship,
take to your day of the week, wherever you celebrate your spirit. Also, gyms, fitness studios, yoga studios, martial arts studios, and similar establishments. Gaming floors, so the casinos will go to 35%. And arcades, racetracks.
Ooh!
Bowling alleys, pool halls, and similar activities at 35% capacity. In 3 weeks, there will be a NASCAR weekend out at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
And the thing is that, you know, some towns have been, you know, conducting sporting events with fans in it. We have not. Zero fans at the Raiders games. We did not get anybody at the Speedway. Nobody's been at Golden Knights games. So this is the tunnel. Like, yes. we're gonna be able to breathe here pretty quick because we're taking care of business as best we can. People are getting stuck in the arms, which is great. And there's an end.
So March 15th, we go back to the pre-pause levels of 50% capacity. All the businesses, public gatherings at 250 people, 50% capacity. The Golden Knights, perhaps even the Henderson Silver Knights, can start submitting large gathering plans on Monday, but no events until March 1st at the earliest.
Yep.
And they have to be reviewed.
It's going to be a great birthday present for me.
So the positive news is that, you know, for example, like for those of you who enjoyed watching Aviators games, for the one season they were at the new ballpark.
Correct.
You know, and then we didn't have a season. You know, AAA baseball is planning on moving forward with an actual schedule in April. It hasn't been announced yet, but hopefully they can get some, you know, people out there as well.
Very good news.
Soccer and whatnot. And then this will pretty much stay in place through May 1st once they hit that March 15th. So May 1st is kind of where it's going to be status quo for a while. And then everything else will kind of open up, including the nightclubs and day clubs and adult entertainment May 1st.
Nature is healing, Paul!
Yeah.
Yeah!
And at that point, hopefully we all get stuck in the arm, for those of you who choose to do so.
You should.
So that's where we're at. That's what the governor laid out.
Excellent.
In the past 30 minutes
Thank you,
or so.
Kind sir.
So we'll at least, you know what? A lot of people were hoping for just the plan. You know, people want dates and plans and things that you can look at.
Haven't we learned not to make plans?
We have. We have. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, again, we're staring at a calendar behind the Vegas Golden Knights banner here in the office. It still says March 2020.
Yeah. Same with my calendar in my office. I haven't changed a lot of the things because it's just kind of like, it's a reminder that we're still in a holding pattern. We're at the end of the tunnel, but it doesn't mean that we can take the breath yet.
Yes, of once was and what could happen. Mm-hmm. But some positive news moving forward. There was a video that I watched, Lindsay, about some of the more annoying athletes when it comes to the world of sports. Mm-hmm. A little bit of it was centered a little bit around hockey, although there was a lot of discussion about other athletes. For example, Lance Stephenson.
Oh, yes. The blowing in the ear.
The blowing. I mean, that's just the one big example, which turned into a monster meme and whatnot. Yep. And
you know, was in the playoffs.
Right. And now Lance Stephenson blows everything like sailboats and,
correct,
you know,
it's
causes.
Brilliant. It was one of the original like memes that real like in sports, because it was what in the he was with the Pacers then, right?
Yes.
And so I think they were playing the Heat in the So this is kind of like right when meme culture was starting to really take off. I mean, memes were obviously still a thing beforehand, but just kind of in the public consciousness.
But he was one of those guys that it wasn't necessarily chirpy or taunty. He just did kind of crazy.
Like, who does this
crazy things to get your attention? You know, Pat Beverly of the Clippers is that same kind of pesky sports athlete.
Sure.
You know, and it's not, his isn't as annoying.
It's like
his
little brother annoying.
Yeah, his has like that kind of bravado, anything you can do, I can do better.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right.
But the video that I watched, and it's just part of the larger conversation, was about a couple of very specific instances. Claude Giroux, who apparently during one, game, and I can't remember who the coach was, it was Pat Burns, refused to send the trainer out to go check on him because he was notorious for flopping.
Yeah, Claude Giroux is low in his early career when he had the long hair.
Yes, the
It was probably Peter Laviolette then for the coach there. But, you know, there are some players that tend to embellish just a little bit. And sometimes it's offensive to the hockey gods, even by our own staff, because it gets kind of annoying sometimes.
The other one, which was at the top of the list, and I had forgotten about it too, but the NHL actually had to make a rule change because of him, was Sean Avery.
Yeah, I hate that instance where he turned around in front of Marty Brodeur and just and the stick, and just like, you can't see. So he's screening the goalie, but it was in an illegal manner. And that was in the playoff situation as well. And they made that ruling like the night of, so he couldn't do it the next day because it was clearly affecting. And it was like, anyway, to do it against Marty Brodeur of all people too, you're like, if there's anything that is gained by the legendary status, it's to get something like this taken care of. Everybody hated Sean Avery.
I watched minutes of that. Well, Sean Avery would do push-ups on the ice.
Yeah, he's a douche. He's a huge douche,
but that was beyond. Yeah. It was beyond pesky. It was near rule-breaking chirping.
There are names we have that for people like that I cannot say on the air.
Well, clearly.
But, like, just, like, very specific in hockey instances. Because there's just, like, guys that, like, showboat that. And the thing is, too, is, like, it's one thing if you showboat and you can back it up. But it's not like Avery was that good. But he had a knack for, like, showing up in moments where, like, he was, like, a third, fourth line guy. But then he'd score, like, two goals. You're like, are you kidding me? Because then it fuels the flames even more. It's like, Sean Avery walks so Brad Marchand could run.
Right.
Brad Marchand is literally the definition of the douche canoe that the hockey player. And he's good, too. That's what's annoying about it. And he's dirty. I hate Brad Marchand. Yes,
a lot of the peskiness of athletes throughout sports, it's well documented. Again, and some of it's clear trash talk, obviously. Mm-hmm. And some of it's in good nature. Others are just in that competitive spirit. But then some of these guys, as we've just mentioned, tend to take it a little bit farther.
Right. Right. And it's like you can do it in the arcade-ish way where, like you said, you do push-ups on the ice, or sometimes like people will read your bios ahead of time so they know the name of your kids, they know the name of your, like I said, I can't repeat some of the word, like the labels that we put on people. The trash talk that I used to hear on the ice, oh my God. You think guys are bad? Women, female hockey players are like some of the most foul-mouthed individuals I've ever heard, because we're not only in the culture that is known for swearing so much, but we overcompensate because clearly we're not, most people don't want us to be here. So we try to like, you know, we try to be even more, we're even more questionable.
Not so much girl power. You just keep tearing each other down.
Right. You're like, the F-bomb is the least of your worries.
It's interesting, you know, and we're talking about this. So over the weekend, I watched on Netflix, there's a documentary on one of my favorite basketball players of the 20th century, which is Tony Parker, who came over from France, is literally considered the best basketball player in French history. I mean,
Rudy Gobert, I suppose.
Yeah, Rudy Gobert is part of that. Mm-hmm. Ronny Turiaf. There's this large group of French basketball players. He's the one that made the full transition.
Yeah, and he had the championships to back it up. And Eva Longoria for a time.
So part of this documentary, it's one of the last interviews that Kobe Bryant ever did. And he actually is, and at the end of the documentary, he's actually in tribute to Kobe Bryant, because they use a lot of stuff that Kobe talked about. He and Parker were friendly competitors, but also friends on the court.
Yeah.
And Parker tells this story because Ronny Turiaf, who also played on the French national team, he and Parker and like Boris Dia also played, you know, he and Turiaf and Parker played together at the French Academy, at their biggest French basketball academy. And Turiaf was a teammate of Bryant's on the Lakers when they were making the big championship runs between these two teams back in the early 2000s.
Sure, I'm sure Kobe, with the Euro connections that he has too, it's like a different layer. And then you have all the championship runs between the Lakers and the Spurs and them bumping up against each other.
So Turiaf tells this story of Kobe Bryant singing, hey, you guys went together to this academy. Is there any dirt you could give me on Tony that I could use against him in the next time we match up? Mm-hmm. To where,
you're just trying to get him off his game, where he's like, how did he figure that? Or how do you say that?
And so Turiaf gave him some stuff, but it was in French. So Bryant apparently learned enough French to be able to trash talk to Parker. To where Parker
in
said,
your native tongue.
Right, to where Parker, and Kobe was hoping for a reaction. Anything you get from him. And Parker actually went total poker face on him, but afterwards complimented him. And he goes, he thought of me as a competitor that much for him to go out and learn French.
Exactly. That's how deep I want to get into your psyche.
To trash talk to me.
Right. Because you can block that out, especially, I'm sure, because if it's in a different language, in many ways, like you have to be much more of an attentive listener when it's not in your native. Oh my God. And that's so, like, that sounds like so Kobe too.
Right. And that's not pesky. That's competitive. Like for me, competitive.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get anything I can get. But you're reminding me of that. Like, you know, people trying to get to know each other's, like, where they grew up or, you know, were they arrested for.
Reggie Miller is notorious for that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing too, is like, there are going to be times where they take it too far, but sometimes when you do it so well and you make it into such an art form, people just kind of respect it, and it's almost like a badge of honor to be like, you're talking trash to me? And like you're, like you said, to go to that length as well. And I mean, in the moment, you're probably incensed. Like I've had people say things to me, I'm just like, I'm going to, but it's about being able to separate and compartmentalize and to move on.
Yeah, Kobe said he couldn't repeat these in public because he goes, we'll keep that between us. But you know, Parker was like, wow, that's, you know, ultimate sign of respect.
Absolutely.
For sure. So, you know,
Revo's up there. Vander Kane's up there too. That's a lot where that fuel comes from. They're just yapping back and forth. I bet Revo's an absolute savage.
He drops gloves before things even happen.
Well, that's what I mean. You chirp people, and then you punch them. It's a double whammy. Oh,
that would be Revo in a Your Mama.
He was clucking in the bubble. He's Mark with Rousseau in Vancouver. Oh my God! There's nothing worse.
That's the stories of the Vancouver Canucks when they were playing the Knights. Stasny tells the stories of him hearing the Canucks yell at him, old man.
Right.
And, you know, go get your walker.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. But it just depends on like what your biggest insecurity is. And sometimes it's a really small thing that it would be just like, it's a throwaway insult, but that's what gets you.
Right.
If it gets you off your game, that's all that's needed.
interestingly enough. So every Thursday, as part of, we work for a larger corporation here, CBS Sports Radio 1140, Entercom, we're trying to spread awareness about the COVID-19 vaccines and try to dispel a few myths that come with it. And we'll be answering a question every week at this time. We had a chance to talk with Dr. Jeffrey Murawski, the Chief Medical Director of Silver Summit Health Plan, about why you need two doses of the vaccine.
The current COVID-19 vaccines require two doses in order to provide the best protection against getting sick from COVID-19. The first dose gets your immune system kind of revved up, knows that it's not a good thing, teaches it to recognize COVID-19. The second dose really gets it flowing and says, okay, this is something I'm going to fight and get rid of.
So the Chief Medical Director of Silver Summit Health Plan, Dr. Jeffrey Murawski, will be answering your questions every Thursday at this time, and you'll be able to submit your questions as well through the website, our website at CBSSportsRadio1140.com. Coming up next, we go back to the ice and revisit those keys to victory for your Vegas Golden Knights.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Lindsay's going to get her heating pad and put on her really warm pants as she heads over to T-Mobile Arena for the Golden Knights and round two with the Anaheim Ducks. So for tonight, Lindsay, after a 5-4 win in which Zach Whitecloud had to be the savior of the good guys, How do they get a repeat performance, hopefully, with not giving up a 3-goal lead tonight?
Well, we talked about D-zone presence. We talked about body positioning and using those hockey butts to their advantage and not getting caught in 50-50 battles. Talked about minimizing turnovers because there's at least 15 of those for takeaways for the Ducks last game. But they got to make sure that they match the snarl and physicality and energy throughout the entire game. They've done a really good job of starting with that, but it's not just resting on the scoreboard itself. It's about making sure that you're not getting complacent, that you're not letting the Ducks generate momentum the old-fashioned way, which is by hitting people, by making good passes, by, you know, skating.
Yeah, they're a hell of a physical team.
Right, and going with that more war of attrition. If that's the way they want to battle, then that's the way you have to do. You have to match it, if not supersede it. And then if you are doing all of those things and you are able to capture momentum and dictate pace a little bit, you got to move your feet, have your head up, and pick up sticks, because if you're going to be taking chances, which is great, which is what our quote of the day was all about, you got to make sure that you're hustling back, that you're back checking, that you're picking up guys as you're entering your D zone. You have to just make sure that you have the lights on in your brain the entire time, not just when it suits your specific game or what the fun parts of the game. And don't necessarily get mesmerized by other people's battles. Like the Ducks have a really good tendency of sucking people down, getting guys pinned up against the boards. And if we send another person, that's fine. But guess what? If our guys are watching, not moving our feet, we're already losing. That's literally how that entire kind of fall apart happened in the third period. So it's not about watching what's going on. It's about taking the preventative measures and making sure that you're staying in the right orbit and at the right speed. They do that, we got a good chance.
Return of Alex Pietrangelo tonight. When you watch him this evening, and when we all watch him this evening, how are we going to know he's comfortable out there?
It starts with the breakout first and foremost, and that he's not, you know, making or rushing decisions, that even with pressure coming down on him, that he's not forcing a pass, that he's not just kind of, you know, trying to take what is not there. Because sometimes when we're trying to find ourselves, we're like, well, this is how I get to my best game. I can do A and then B and then C. But then guess what? We're not counting in. We're not doing our Microsoft Word with ABC. We're doing with the I and then the double I and then the triple I. It's about just making sure that he's gapping right, that he's making simple plays and not doing too much. Shea Theodore is going to be out of the lineup tonight. He's a huge part of that power play, as Pietrangelo is. So I expect him to be included with that tonight. But as long as he's making decisive decisions and not second guessing and not being apprehensive, that's a good thing. I'd rather somebody be decisive and make a mistake rather than just be like, and then all of a sudden it's a much different type of problem, because now you're taking away confidence from yourself as well.
All eyes, even though we are in first place in the West, this is one of our, you know, things that's, you know, we've talked about, you know, for a while now, is how will we know when Robin Leonard is actually going to be comfortable tonight?
It's about making sure, it's about him making saves and just kind of not giving up the ones that you shouldn't. And it starts with that first puck. You know, he's a guy that does a lot better when the offense when the other team's offense sets up in zone, and he's able to compartmentalize the ice and have them play from out down low, because he's a big body. He wants pucks in tight, but you don't want to be giving up, you know, odd man rushes. You don't want these guys getting a lot of time and space on their initial zone entries, because they can pick a corner, especially if he's not on his angles or if he's coming out a little bit too far. I always, whenever I coach goalies, and it was one of the main mantras that I always told myself, because when things started to get a little bit crazy, I would chase a little bit. I would gap out a little bit more. Do less. Literally do less. Goalies always have the bad rep, but it's not true that we're lazy. Sometimes you have to act like it. And especially with his style, which is analytical, which is staying in the crease and using that body and his reads to cut down on those angles and staying in front of that puck, it's a good thing. You don't want him moving that laterally that much, and you don't want to be giving people time and space to start picking corners. It's just not going to go well, and it's one hand feeds the other in a way, because the defense has to play well and the team has to play well in front of him, but he also has to get off to a good start so the team feels like, you know, it's not a seven-alarm fire in their own defensive zone.
Yeah, we need to make sure that we don't become, again, the third-period team that we've become accustomed to. You know, well,
exactly.
They
60 minutes of hockey ball.
You know, this team's jumped out early. I mean, we've had the benefit of having early goals, you know, in a number of the games, you know, in this, you know, fairly young season. But
for sure.
You know, that third period has always been where they've stepped on the gas, and,
yep.
You know, the availability and the meaningfulness and the reasoning to be consistent is even more important, I think, tonight for this team.
Yep.
Knowing that they're rolling into a back-to-back this weekend, playing quite a few minutes here in just a short period of time.
There's nothing wrong with some dump and chase hockey. Not everything has to be an offensive chance. Sometimes it's just, you know, punting the ball and living to fight another set of downs with hopefully a better, more favorable field position.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes tonight. Golden Knights, again, round two with the Anaheim Ducks. We'll have a full analysis coming up for you tomorrow during the show. Full show tomorrow as well. All right, for Mark Benia, making things sound nice, she's Lindsay Brown. I'm Paul Eihander. Coming up next, a couple hours of Zach Gelb, and then our good friend JR Sport Brief at 7 o'clock. Stay for that. If you can't, it's available on the radio.com app. That's a wrap on the Playmakers for a Thursday.
Sports!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.